This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio, heard weekdays from noon to one. Now, Fight Back with Libby Znaimer on Zoomer Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome. It's Tuesday, time for our crack strategy panel. And the Prime Minister keeps touting very large numbers of vaccines that are coming, some of them supposed to land this week. This as we are starting to see some very unequal access as the provinces begin the process of vaccinating people 80 and over. And the Conservatives are set to pounce on a seeming dust-up between two federal agencies or bodies when it comes to the AstraZeneca vaccine. Now, it was approved on Friday by Health Canada for all adults over 18, but yesterday, in a bombshell recommendation, the National Vaccine Advisory Panel said it should not be used in people over 65 because there's not enough evidence. Now, Health Canada shot back and said they have rigorously evaluated the data from the clinical trials, which everybody says were kind of a mess, and there weren't many people over 65 in the trials, but there are now encouraging reports from real-world use in older populations. And what those reports show is that that particular vaccine is 80% effective in reducing hospitalization and death. And that's compared to people who didn't have the vaccine. So where are we at? There's this dust up. NACI, the National Vaccine Advisory Panel, well, it's just a recommendation. I don't know. To me, this just shows the helter-skelter, confused aspect of the rollout. But more important, what does our panel think? I am joined by Karen Stintz, CEO of Variety Village, Charles Sousa, former Minister of Finance for Ontario, and John Capobianco, Vice President and Senior Partner, Fleischmann Hillard High Road. Hi, everyone.
Hi, Libby.
Okay, let us begin with Karen. So this is just the latest on the vaccine rollout.
Yeah, it's the government really has a way of making things extremely complicated by themselves.
Yeah,
by themselves. So there's no question that we know what we negotiated delivery targets based on quarter instead of specific weeks. Okay, that was done. Now the vaccine's coming in. To be honest with you, more announcements about the 20 more million doses we've ordered is really immaterial because they're not here. And the fact that every Canadian eventually can get three shots doesn't matter because the rollout is still confused. And, I think you brought up earlier, Libby, the Israeli government has had such success inoculating their citizenry. I don't understand why we just can't follow the models at work. And well, what they did is they made it simple. Everyone over 90, everyone over 80, everyone over 70, everyone over 60. And they got it done. But now we're tripping ourselves up over, subgroups and subclusters and sub-communities, and then, but they can only have this vaccine or that vaccine. They shouldn't have, it's enough to make your head spin.
Well,
and from someone, who just wants to be, get some notice, when can we reopen? It's so discouraging beyond words.
I mean, just to jump in on that. So first of all, my nephew, who is studying in Israel, who is not a citizen, who is 27 years old, he was vaccinated nearly a month ago.
Right.
Again, that's dealing with the Ontario government that seems to bow to every pressure group when the right. Evidence is older people die in the biggest proportions. Let's get them vaccinated. And they are again going to the back of the line. And on top of this dust up at the federal level, you have people here in Toronto at the back of the line behind homeless people and other groups and police, young, healthy police getting vaccinated before 90-year-olds. And, you know, people looking over at Peel and York region where people are starting to get the shots. John Capobianco.
Well, it's frustrating. Karen's right that it's confusing without a doubt. And you know, we're starting to hear now anecdotally, and you mentioned your nephew, Libby, but also I think on one of your previous shows that we were on, one of your callers who's a snowbird in Mexico said that she had gotten a vaccine in Mexico, if you recall that. And so we're starting to hear that, and that's what's making things more frustrated. And I think for the government's perspective, you know, I hear that they want to, and I know and understand, and I hear that they want to get out there and they want to be able to say, look, we're getting more vaccines, we've got more commitments, there's more doses coming in. You know, given that Canadians are literally waiting and hearing and wanting to know about this information, I think it's important that they get out there. But it becomes a really strained messaging perspective when you hear that, and then you hear from the presidents or the various leaders of these pharmaceuticals companies who are saying, well, we can't guarantee that there won't be a stoppage at some point. And I guess that they have to say that because there's never a guarantee that they're going to be able to ship these out. But when you're hearing that, and then you're also seeing this debate that you just mentioned about the Health Canada and the organization NACI, you know, the vaccine organization, that there's conflicting messaging that one is saying, NACI is saying that, well, we shouldn't be giving the AstraZeneca vaccine to anybody 65 years and over, and Health Canada is saying, vehemently opposing that, saying, well, no, of course, at the end of the day, you know, people should be getting whatever vaccine is available. But it's giving sort of more voice to the naysayers about this whole process. And it's not helping when the government does say something, because people then turn to it and say, well, who do I believe? You know, you're hearing things in the U.S. with Dr. Fauci saying one thing about, you know, doses shouldn't be spread too far apart from each other. You know, specifically the vaccines that are Pfizer and Moderna, which are involved in two doses. And some places are saying, well, we're going to try to extend the period by 4 months instead of whatever weeks it is that you need to, because they want to make sure more and more people get at least one dose of it. And then you're hearing, well, no, nobody should be doing it. So it's conflicting, and it's causing a lot of anxiety. And that's the challenge. You know, we all want we want to will them to make sure this all works and that people get vaccinated as soon as possible. But these conflicting messages does not help governments. It does not help Canadians.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, part of it is that it's new, it's science, and it evolves. But I think that, you know, the conflicting information that we're seeing here and the conflicting rollout, it just seems very unfair, frankly, Charles.
Yeah, it's frustrating. I mean, anecdotally, here, personally, my uncle, he's 85 years old, and his wife, my aunt, is also in her 80s. They're elderly. They're good, though. They're in good form. They're living alone, and they're calling me saying, we don't want to go into a vaccination unit and wait in a lineup. We don't want to get exposed to COVID by going for a vaccine. And so the rollout, while there seems to be more confidence in its ability now, given that there's availability of vaccines coming on stream, this mixed messaging, this notion of the three phases that are being before us, it is convoluted. And, you know, does the grocer get a vaccine now? I mean, they're on the front lines, too, to some extent that they're being exposed. It is confusing. It would be a lot simpler. I know the Ontario Chamber of Commerce came out today with a report saying the United States have vaccinated in one day more than all of Canada combined. And so we just need to get those needles in those arms and just simplify the process. Don't provide confusion to those that are in need of support. And just start establishing those dates and just get it done. And frankly, September worries me. We people need these now, right? This notion of us having to wait too long. But I get it. There are more vulnerable individuals that deserve to have it done. But they're afraid to have it done, or they don't even know when to have it done or where to have it done. So that's the part that's confusing to many.
Well, it's not rolled out properly. Yeah. So what's the bottom line on this? What's the political fallout from this, Karen?
I think there stands to be great political fallout because, unfortunately, the more complicated that you make something, the harder it is to administer. And when you've got so many vulnerable groups that are moving to the top of the line, And to your point, Libby, we know, we already know that the over 80s and over 70s are the most vulnerable group, bar none, bar none. So we all can agree on that. So just focus your energies on the most high-risk group that is at most vulnerable of being hospitalized and dying. That is where we need to focus all our collective energies. And everybody can get on board with that. But then to your point, well, when you sneak in the cops and then you sneak in this group and that group and then, you know, and also the homeless shelters, like just thinking about how to administer that when there's people that are coming and going, like they should be getting, you know, the Johnson & Johnson shot because it's one shot. It'll be more effective. But again, it just doesn't feel like there's a strategy, and it hasn't felt like there's been a strategy for a long time. And that is the most undermining aspect of public trust. And that is the part where the political fallout will be the greatest.
Well, it's interesting that you say this. I had a talk with the chair of the Board of Health in Toronto and asked, you know, why are you prioritizing homeless over people over 80? And he's saying that, you know, the province made him do it. And oddly, I don't think that's the case. I think they fought very hard to get those homeless shelters done ahead of other people.
And again, I don't want to take more time than I have, but I'm in talks with the Community Center for North Toronto, which is one of the vaccination sites. And I asked, how do you book an appointment? We don't know. Is it online or is it a phone? We don't know. How many people can you take in a day? We don't know. How many, like, are you going to use the whole community center or just part of just the two rooms? We don't know.
Well, exactly. And at yesterday's round of briefings, they mentioned pharmacies. Well, you know, we're in contact with doctors and pharmacies. They know nothing.
Yeah. And they only have nurses right now doing the jabs. There's not enough nurses. There's just not enough nurses to do the jabs that need to get done.
Well, you know what? You don't need a nurse to get a jab.
No.
There are all kinds of people who not only can administer the shots, but who really want to. But they haven't been contacted. So, I mean, where is the fallout the worst, Charles, politically? Is it federally? Is it provincially? Is it at the city level?
Well, federally, they've now, have confirmed and secured and approved various dosage, including AstraZeneca most recently. And so they have supply. It'll be on its way, if not. And there's been over, 570,000 vaccines already administered in Canada or even in Ontario. There's the rollout of the next 8 million doses that are going to be required in April, if we're looking at those over 80 and some of the primary care givers. That has to expedite pretty quickly. And that's going to be a provincial matter. The distribution and the inoculations will be a provincial issue. And the onus will now be more focused on them in terms of their ability to administer the program. And they do talk about pharmacies in phase three, I believe it is. And there's also mobile injections for those most vulnerable. I would assume that by this point in time, they would have already had conversations with all those touch points to get those. Once the vaccines come in, let's expedite them as quickly as possible, regardless of some of the phases that are necessary, to the extent that we get those seniors done. And I don't know what's taking. I don't know why we're waiting so long to have them administered. But I think the fallout will be more provincial than it is federal at this point. There seems to be some confidence now that the actual acquirement of the vaccines are on its way. Now people are worried about how to get them in their arms.
John, do you agree? Federally, I mean, I keep checking our world in data every day, and we are still number 43 in the world. And according to, there's another Lowy Index that's also considered very reliable, and we're in the 60s there.
Yeah, I think by way of political fallout, I think it always, especially when it comes to crises of this magnitude, which are global and of course, in national in scope, that it's sort of it's the top down, right? It's the prime ministers, the premiers, and then the local politicians. And I think what we've seen, and you know, to Charles's point regarding, you know, what has happened with respect to the vaccines, well, we know that we just didn't have enough vaccines. We just didn't have enough vaccines up until now, and Now the prime minister is saying that we're getting vaccines, and there's indications that we're getting some. And AstraZeneca now has been approved, and Johnson & Johnson is not too far behind with respect to its approval and dissemination. So, you know, at the end of the day, there would never have been that much issues with respect to jabs in arms if there was no shortage of vaccines, if there was abundance of vaccines that every province was able to have, and if there wasn't the sophistication of storage and double doses and all that kind of stuff. It was like, we've done this before. We've got an annual flu vaccine that we give, you know, Canadians on an annual basis. It's not, you know, it's not hard to be able to have, you know, people and organizations sort of give out vaccines when needed. The problem we had, of course, was that there was this varied stages of you know, what vaccines were going to come, and then which provinces got how many doses, and then of course the double doses and the sub-zero degrees storage that caused all of these problems. And I think, and I'm hoping, that with AstraZeneca coming and with Johnson and Johnson coming and all of these commitments that we're going to be getting more vaccines, that the provinces are going to start to just put jabs in arms and do as much as they can to get as many people as they possibly can vaccinated. So that said, I think that the prime minister does wear a lot of it with respect to the actual story or to the actual commitment of the vaccines. But at some point, to Charles's point, you know, once it gets to the provinces, they then have to have a plan to be able to make sure that people are getting this and people are being vaccinated. And even at the local city level, same at that point as well. So they want to make sure that everybody is coordinated and sort of speaking with at least one voice when it comes to this.
Okay. We've got to wrap things up. Charles, I will give you the last 20 seconds.
Yeah, I think there's a degree of comfort knowing that vaccines are on its way or have been administered or are available now. I am confident, though, that the moment these vaccines start to be rolled out, the province will get their act together in respect to distribution and initiatives. We have to get the pharmacies and docs involved beyond just the units, the health units. And in a month's time, I'm hoping people will be more comfortable and safer. I'm an optimist, and I'm hoping that'll be the case.
Charles, I hope you're right. Got to admit, I have got my doubts. And we've got to wrap things up now. Thank you so much, Karen Stintz, John Capobianco, and Charles Sousa. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Libby.
Good afternoon.
Thanks, Libby.
Okay. Bye. So, seniors in Toronto have been casting envious glances at their counterparts in Peel and York regions who have started to receive their shots. It's mostly happening through local hospitals, which have their own booking systems. And those booking systems have, of course, been under pressure, but still they've confirmed thousands of appointments and they've administered a reasonable number. And this, of course, is happening amid the news about the AstraZeneca vaccine. So let's check in with Dr. Lawrence Lowe, Medical Officer of Health for the region of Peel. Hi, Dr. Lowe. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Libby.
So tell us where you're at in Peel region in terms of how many appointments you have set. Do you know how many vaccines you've already administered since yesterday for people over 80?
So we only just started with a very limited rollout of 80 plus over the weekend and into today. Our big launch was yesterday with our hospital partners moving to launch their registration site at Trillium Health Partners in Mississauga and an online real-time booking system for William Osler in Brampton. The hospitals are currently delivering vaccine because out of the allocations we've received, there is some additional allocation that supports a limited rollout to 80 plus. And so that's why we've made some appointments available. I do know, and I just heard from our William Osler partners, that they've managed to now book almost 6,000 appointments just with the system having been up under 24 hours. And so I think, you know, as those go through and through the week, we're really grateful to be able to offer that level of protection to our residents 80 over.
Now, I believe that in Peel region, what do you have, something like 65,000 people over 80? Am I right?
So the number is 50,000, roughly, and that's not clear community versus long-term care. We do know we also have 10,000 long-term care residents. So if you combine them together, that might get the number that you're looking at right there.
Okay, so and presumably the ones in long-term care have already been done?
That's correct. They've we've already together with the other harder hit regions of Ontario managed to offer two doses to all of our long-term care home residents, and our uptake has been quite significant. I think we were looking at over 90% uptake in that population, providing a significant protective benefit to that community.
Now, in terms of people in the community, you know, especially here in Toronto, people are having big concerns with access, and we know that people in that age group, they want those shots. Are you comfortable that what you have up and running is going to make sure that there's an equitable distribution of the vaccines?
Yeah, it's a small step forward, and I think I have to really, really underline that at this point in time, a lot of our appointments are still limited by a critical shortage in supply. You know, we have been advised that more vaccine is coming in the next few weeks, though, and to the extent that in addition to the online options, there are phone options for people as well. I encourage the community to reach out to the over 80s that they know, the people that might need support, make sure that they're able to get the appointments. And I'll also highlight that, you know, even though supply is limited, more is on the way. So please, if you don't get an appointment, at least in the outset, you know, keep checking back. You know, more will be released as our supply hopefully improves.
And do you have a sense of how many vaccines you'll be able to administer?
Yeah, so we understand that we have tens of thousands of vaccines coming in the next few weeks, and that's going to increase even more significantly in April. So I think to the extent that we're trying to take this measure now, knowing that we had some limited supply that could be made available to our 80 pluses, and we know that, you know, the provincial booking system will also be coming online, hopefully, which will then open up more choice as public health clinics start to get supply in disseminated areas in our community and mobile clinics also start to get launched. I'm hopeful that this is, you know, really just a small step forward, but it will continue to pick up pace as we move into the spring.
Okay, Dr. Lowe, you know, this is happening just as we have some conflicting news about the AstraZeneca vaccine, which Canada has ordered a lot of. So we have Health Canada saying it is safe for people over the age of 50, and there's real-world data coming in that it's effective. And just yesterday, the National Advisory Vaccine Council recommended that it not be used in people over 65. So what's your view on that? Are you going to use it in that population in Peel region or not?
So we will abide by the guidance that comes down from the provincial government, which will ultimately be based on the federal guidance. But I think I would highlight to everyone at this point in time, you know, the data are the data. In general, for most people, within the indications that a vaccine is provided for, getting a vaccine is better than no vaccine. And, you know, if there's an age cutoff that's been identified there in the federal data, we'll comply with it. We'll certainly continue to monitor the evidence. We know that it's always evolving, and different countries have had different views on the uses of vaccines throughout this. And we will certainly obviously change our guidance in the face of new data and evidence. But I think the big thing I would say is even if we do end up using AstraZeneca for a different age bracket, it does mean that for the Pfizer and Moderna, which we do continue to get in the region of Peel, those are then more also available for our, you know, much older population as well.
So I'm just trying to get a sense of what's going to happen. So this is the national advisory body, and you are going to wait for the provincial version of that to say yay or nay on AstraZeneca over 65. Am I right?
That's correct. So the way this works is Health Canada determines if the vaccine is safe and effective. The National Advisory Committee on Immunization proposes guidelines for the most optimal use of the vaccine based on the data they see. And then the provincial government ultimately, because health, as you know, is a provincial responsibility under the Constitution, they ultimately put together the protocols and guidelines for use by ourselves at the local level.
Now, as I mentioned, this guideline was released not because there's evidence that it doesn't work, but because the panel says there's not enough evidence. And that's quite true, I guess, from the clinical trial, but there is real world data now. And we know that just as the panel was releasing this recommendation, France, which had said they're not using it on people over 65, said, okay, we now have data. And we're changing our mind on that because AstraZeneca has been used quite extensively in that age group in the UK, which has got a lot of people vaccinated. So what do you make of that? And is that just going to make people hesitant about that particular vaccine? You know, should the panel say, oops, new data, changing our minds?
So, Libby, that was what I was saying in my previous answer. The data and the science is constantly evolving. This is a new disease. These are new vaccines. The biggest thing I would say is that for whichever group is identified by the National Advisory Committee of Immunizations at the time of the evidence that they've looked at, that is a vaccine that I would recommend that people get. And certainly, if the evidence evolves, I know that the UK, it'll be interesting to see what France say. I'll leave it to my federal counterparts to make the determination. If they then take the time and the due diligence to look through the numbers and consider the Canadian context and say, you know, it'd be great for 65 overs, then I would have absolute confidence in that decision if and when it does come.
Okay. And finally, let's say this decision stands. Have you had a look at how it would affect the idea of rolling it out in descending order of age if that vaccine is not going to be offered to people who are over 65?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that those are discussions that are well underway. We do know we have essential worker populations. We do know we have people 50 to 64 who also do still see severe outcomes of disease. I imagine prioritization, which is actually handled at the provincial level, will take all that into account. And we in local public health units will abide by the decisions of the ministry.
Okay. Well, thanks very much. And congratulations on getting it going in the community. Good for you.
Thanks so much, Libby.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we are going to drill down a little more on this whole question of the AstraZeneca vaccine and the recommendations regarding it. And apparently, we are going to receive nearly 1 million doses of it this week. So we will be having that when we return. Let me give the numbers out again, should you have questions. 416-360-0740, toll free 1-866-740-4740.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one. Oh, no. Fight Back with Libby Znaimer on Zoomer Radio.
Welcome back. As we've been discussing, Canada's National Advisory Committee on Immunization, NACI, does not recommend the AstraZeneca vaccine for adults over the age of 65. Health Canada says there's just not enough evidence from clinical trials to show whether it works in this population. But that recommendation came yesterday, as I said, as France reversed that guidance and will now administer this vaccine for seniors based on real-world experience. And researchers published preliminary findings of that real-world experience, and they found that one dose of either the Pfizer or the AstraZeneca vaccine reduced hospitalization risk for adults over 70 by 80%. So what does that all mean? Again, the numbers, 416-360-0740, toll-free 1-866-740-4740. And now let us bring in Dr. Alon Vaisman, epidemiologist and infectious disease specialist at the University Health Network. Hi, Dr. Vaisman. How are you?
Good. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming on. So this is a fairly confusing situation for most of us. We have a bit of a dust-up between Health Canada, which says AstraZeneca is fine for people over 65, and NACI, which says it isn't. What do you make of that?
Right. So just to clarify, whenever we're talking about vaccines, there's two distinct ideas. One is how effective the vaccine is. The other one is if it's safe. So the bottom line is that there's no reason to believe that it's not safe in elderly people. It certainly is. As for the efficacy, where this all stems from is the original trial data in December looking at AstraZeneca. Not many people who are over the age of 65 were included in that trial. So many bodies, including France, as you mentioned, and Italy, Spain, the EU, had not initially recommended the vaccine for that age group. But since that vaccine has been rolled out, many elderly people have, in fact, been vaccinated against it. vaccine against COVID using that vaccine, and the data is now showing that there is actual good efficacy in that age group. So hence, when the Health Canada approval came out, it was a statement saying that it is safe to give in that group, but NACI's statement is based more on the concrete data that's available to show that it's effective.
Yeah, I get that, but it sounds like a very confusing situation for people who are contemplating getting the vaccine. I mean, we have just read 945,000 doses of this coming this week, apparently, and the rollout in the community is supposed to go in descending order of age. So, you know, saying that it's not going to be useful for people over 65, if that is not really the case, it seems problematic. What do you think?
Right. So NACI, their threshold or their assessment of the data may be more of like a conservative approach than what Health Canada's assessment was. NACI provides recommendations to the rest of Canada about how the vaccine should be rolled out. Every province and other health units will decide on how they want to best do it. So it'll come down to those units deciding on which people will get which vaccine using the guidance. We know that it's safe as per Health Canada, so if a unit feels that based on the best available data that they can provide it to the elderly people in their units, then that's probably what's going to happen. I think a practical approach will be taken across Canada to realize that these vaccines, regardless which one, the bottom line is that they prevent hospitalizations and they prevent deaths. And if the health units feel strongly, they will provide all these vaccines because it's the fastest and most effective thing to do to reduce the cases and bring the pandemic down.
And do you have a view on this?
I think the bottom line here is to get cases down as fast as possible. If the next of a vaccine that's available to you is the AstraZeneca and you're over 65, then there's currently good evidence to suggest that you should be getting that vaccine and that we should be getting that vaccine to as many people as possible. So as you mentioned, France has reversed their decision. It may be only a matter of time before other bodies do the same thing based on real-world data which supports this.
Yeah, and can you just give us a little primer? What's the difference between the clinical trial data and real-world data?
So sometimes in clinical trials, they may enroll only a narrow group of individuals to try to get the trial done quickly and to try to demonstrate efficacy to the best degree that they can. But in the real world, a lot of people who are not included in the trials end up getting the vaccine either due to preference or due to some health units saying that it's safe to do so. So when you see drugs or vaccines being rolled out in the real world, you start to get actual data about whether it's effective in those groups. And that's what happened with the vaccine here with the AstraZeneca.
Are you okay there?
Yes, apologies. It's just an announcement overhead at the hospital.
Okay, I'm going to take a call from Bruce in Guelph. Hi, Bruce.
How are you doing, Libby?
Fine, how are you?
Good. So I got a couple questions and a comment. First of all, my dad lives in Mississauga. I'm in Cambridge. He doesn't have a computer. He's 94 years old. Who do I call, talk to try to get an appointment? And the second thing is, will I be able to say, okay, I'm still unsure about this AstraZeneca, being only 65%, whereas we know the Moderna and the Pfizer are 95. So will I be able to refuse the AstraZeneca for him and say, no, I want the Pfizer? And same as myself, I'm 66 myself. I would rather get the Moderna and the Pfizer to be sure of 95%.
So I can tell you the answer to that question is I don't think you can choose your vaccines, but it's not clear that that the AstraZeneca will even be offered to older people based on the recommendation. But if it is, and that's what they're offering you, that's what you get or you don't get is my understanding. Now the hospitals, you said your father's in Peel?
He's in Mississauga.
Mississauga. So that's Trillium. Their vaccine, rollout is going through Trillium.
Okay.
Trillium Health. So, I think there's also a phone, but you have to look, locally. Bruce, I hope that helps. Thanks for your call.
Another question, maybe?
Yep.
I'm just wondering. So let's say you do get the AstraZeneca as the first one, and it's not available when you go for your second shot. Can you get the Pfizer or Moderna? Will it matter? Can you mix them?
I don't know about that. Doesn't sound like a great idea, Dr. Vaisman. Can you mix the vaccines?
No, the recommendation is that you get whatever you get your first dose with, you will get your second dose, and it'll be provided at the same site that you got your first dose with. And as for choosing whichever vaccine you want, what will happen in the early stages of the rollout during March is that patients will be offered a vaccine. Of course, anyone can choose to refuse it if they wish, but it'll be unclear when the next time a different vaccine will be offered to them or if it'll be a different vaccine at all. So I think the general message should be for the population, given that these are all approved in this age group, including by Health Canada, that the first vaccine that's offered to you is probably the one that you should take so that you are protected as soon as possible.
Okay, Bruce, I hope that helps. And if I can just share this is totally anecdotal, not scientific, but my husband and I have very close friends in the UK. The woman retired early as a very, very senior pharmaceutical executive with one of the big global companies. Husband's a bit older, 70 years old. We called him on his birthday and he said, well, gee, I've just taken the AstraZeneca vaccine. And at that point, there was only the evidence from the clinical trials. And I said, well, aren't you nervous about that? Blah, blah. Anyway, she had read whatever data there was available. They were completely comfortable with it. And all I can say is that, you know, if I'm sure that they would have been able to get whatever vaccine they want because of their connections, and they didn't. So I don't know. It's been injected in a lot of people in the UK because they've really done a good job with their rollout. So I don't know. Dr. Vaisman, I don't know if it was good or bad for me to share that story, but it's part of that real world stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the UK experience is exactly what's going to inform our experience on how we use this AstraZeneca vaccine. And that's what the Health Canada approval was based on. That real-world data coming out of UK of the effectiveness of the AstraZeneca is quite reassuring for our experience.
Yeah, but do you think that getting a recommendation like that from the panel is, I mean, you know, I'm sure there are a lot of other people who are thinking, gee, I don't really want that AstraZeneca one. And frankly, I think they were thinking that even before this recommendation came out, just because of the overall numbers.
Yet I perfectly understand that, especially elderly people living in Canada, they see this recommendation and they're probably confused about why it was approved by Health Canada, but there was a change or a slightly different recommendation from NACI, the National Advisory for the Immunization. It's certainly possible that they will also revise their decision based on future evidence that becomes available. So that data that you mentioned earlier from the UK, that was only freshly available now as well. And so these kinds of things are a work in progress, and NACI is constantly reviewing this data. So perhaps with more real-world data, they'll feel more confident in making a revision. And by that time, we may have more of the doses actually available. As you mentioned, it's not quite here yet in Canada, so there is still some time to review this.
And these are vaccines that use completely different technologies. The Pfizer Moderna are this mRNA technology, which is brand new. Should you know people have questions about that? Does that, what kind of a difference does that make?
Certainly, the way that the vaccine is delivered to your cells, the way that the antigen is delivered, is different. With the mRNA being a genetic code, and the AstraZeneca being what's called an inactivated virus, so kind of like a vehicle to carry the protein over to your cells. But in any event, regardless of the difference in the mechanism, we know that both are highly effective at preventing hospitalization and preventing death. And that's the bottom line when it comes to protecting the population. And so an individual is trying to make a decision or thinking about the data, I think that's the most important factor to consider. Plus, the safety data is very reassuring for both.
What about protection against these new variants?
That's a great question. So as far as we know, against the most common variant in Canada, B117, which originated in the UK, we do believe that the mRNA vaccines and the AstraZeneca are effective against the variants. There is less knowledge available about the other more concerning variant, which originally came from South Africa and from Brazil, but those are, as of yet, are not common in Canada. So the most common variant, we know that the vaccines are likely going to be effective against them.
Okay, and a final question. We've been talking to the Medical Officer of Health in Peel. We're about to talk to the Medical Officer of Health in York. And in those regions, they're starting to inoculate people over 80, and it's mostly happening through the hospitals. What are you hearing about what might be happening through the University Health Network? Is it likely, as far as you know, to be any sooner than April the 1st, which is what public health here is talking about?
Yep, I think you'll start seeing that in through the hospitals in Toronto, you're going to start seeing that vaccine rollout come out as well, that through the hospitals themselves, the patients that are affiliated with the hospitals are going to be starting vaccinated in the very near future. And that's based on the rollout plan from the province. So just like these other regions, that's going to start. It may not be through the same kind of model that the other regions are using, but definitely the centers that have experience doing it, the big centers here, the big hospitals, they're going to start doing that too throughout the month of March at some point.
Mm-hmm. I mean, for instance, I saw this morning that you could pre-register at Sunnybrook. It didn't say that you had to be a Sunnybrook patient at University Health Network. Do you know? Do you have to have been a patient in recent times, or is it just if you live in Toronto?
Right. So for the sake of practicality, what's likely going to happen is that the first people who will be vaccinated are people who are directly associated with the hospital, who receive regular care at the hospital. And then, as you mentioned, the registration will be more broad to the bigger group of people in the community to try to get as many of those people. But because the hospitals have more contact with certain high-risk groups, elderly people who are here more frequently for some medical issues, those people are likely going to be the ones who are most easily accessible to get vaccinated first.
Okay. Dr. Alon Vaisman, thank you so much for that.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
Okay. I am actually going to take a call from Lillian, even though, Lillian, I'm not sure I'm able to answer your questions, but go ahead and ask.
Hi, Libby. Well, I had this whole big thing to tell you, but now that you asked about Sunnybrook, which was what my doctor sent an email this morning saying that she doesn't have the vaccine and people should not call her office, but that she directed us to go to either North York General or Sunnybrook, which was what you just said. And I went to Sunnybrook, and there were like a list of four things you need to be eligible. One is you have to be over 70, and that's what I am. I'm only affiliated with Sunnybrook because I once went there for something that I broke. And other than that, I don't know what your question was. How are they going to filter people out?
Well, I don't think you have to be, because frankly, I saw that Sunnybrook through and I alerted the older members of my family. And I can tell you that one of them got through and registered early in the morning, and he does not have any connection with Sunnybrook or any other hospital, frankly. So and he got, you know, confirmation that he's been pre-registered. Whether that results in an appointment, we have yet to see.
And when they get the vaccine, they said they don't know.
They don't know.
And having registered at Sunnybrook, does that preclude you from
I don't know the answer to that. I'm sorry. We'll try to find out for you, but I don't know the answer to that.
Thank you, Libby.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Okay. We have got to take another break. When we come back, the Medical Officer of Health for York Region will be with us.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to 1. Fight Back with Libby Znaimer on Zoomer Radio.
Welcome back, and let's bring in Dr. Karim Kurji, the York Region Chief Medical Officer of Health. Hi, Dr. Kurji.
Hello, Libby. How are you?
I'm fine, and I'm just reading. I haven't got all the way through of the briefing about what you managed to get done in York Region in terms of vaccinating people over 80. So why don't you tell us? It looks very impressive.
Sure. Well, you know, it's very important that we get vaccines into the over 80 population quickly. According to the CDC, I mean, the risk of death for those that are over 85 is some 630 times greater than folks who are 18 to 29 years of age. And, you know, so we certainly don't want them to get COVID-19. We know that the provincial system is correctly so, you know, taking a little while to get completely ready. After all, Ontario is about half of Canada's population, and we have all made a lot of demands on the provincial system to have linkages to this and that system, and they're piloting it. So we had, as part of our planning for immunizations, we had always prepared all sorts of contingencies for loss of sites, loss of technology, loss of staff, etc. So we had to kick in our plan B. And the plan B meant we would use the hospital's booking systems, and these were a little bit modified, you know, so a little bit there. And we used a system called ActiveNet, which the municipalities have been using for a long time for recreational programs. And we had used this program for flu clinics. So it needed adaptation again with respect to handling seniors over the age of 80. And our IT folks worked flat out over the weekend to ensure that that was quite ready. And so we have all these systems. Now, like in any rollout, there will be bumps. And this isn't perfection, but we hope to have speed over perfection. And in these bumps, you would have three categories where you would probably have bumps. One is the IT area.
Dr. Kurji, I don't mean to interrupt you, but I'd rather get to, the numbers of what you have done rather than the IT issues. I think Everybody who has any sense at all expects that when tens of thousands of people are trying to get onto any system at once, there are going to be some issues, obviously. So yes. I'm just looking and I see you booked 20,000 appointments across five current vaccinations yesterday. So do you know approximately how many that you are doing today?
So on any given day, we would be doing around 4,000 individuals. Sometimes the number varies a little bit from about 3,000, but we'd be getting up to almost somewhere between 600 and over 1,000 in each clinic. And we do propose to bring on board additional clinics. But the rate-limiting factor right now is really the vaccine. And when you come to the vaccine area, because of a vaccine goes to different sites, because we follow the model where we are using our hospital partners' clinics and public health clinics. And when you follow a model like that, and with some of the logistical issues of not being able to transport from vaccine from one partner to another easily, because you want to safeguard the validity of the vaccine, right? It does mean that there has to be a lot more that has to be done to maximize the use of vaccines that might be in freezers. And so all that is occurring concurrently. And in addition to that, we hope to be receiving a steady supply and steady and increasing supply of the Pfizer vaccine.
Well, it says that you're confirmed to receive 9,300 doses of Pfizer vaccine each week.
That's correct, yes.
Now, let me ask you, let me just jump in and ask you, the AstraZeneca vaccine was approved by Health Canada, but we now have a bit of a dust-up where we have NACI, the vaccination panel, the national one, saying they don't want it used in people over 65, and Health Canada coming back and saying, no, it's perfectly fine for people over 65. So have you decided if you are going to be offering this to older people?
So because we are at a local level and we come under the ministry's guidance, right, we would actually be deferring the actual decision to the province of Ontario, so the ministry. However, if it was up to me, I would say go for it, you know, because I am in favor of what Health Canada has said.
That particular recommendation was because of a lack of evidence in the clinical trials. And as we've been discussing, there's some real world data, mostly from the UK, that it actually, it certainly works in terms of preventing hospitalization in people over 70.
Yes, and also it prevents death and it prevents severe illness, right, which leads to hospitalization. And I have some medical school friends who practice in the UK, and I've been in touch with them, and they have been fine with respect to using AstraZeneca in the over 65, over 80s. So I certainly have no problems with using it there. However, we would defer this to our province, right, to make the decision.
And should the province say it's fine to use AstraZeneca, do you worry that because of this recommendation, people will be hesitant about using it? I mean, I've been getting calls, and frankly, even before this came out, because of the original clinical trial data, people are saying, gee, I'd rather have Pfizer or Moderna.
Indeed. Unfortunately, this sort of contradictory information from pretty august bodies, right, adds to skepticism as to whether a given recommendation by one body or the other is actually genuine. However, I think perhaps the way that we may have to approach this, given that, is probably to reluctantly have it used under the 64-year-old age group to ensure good take-up. But even within that age group, I think you're probably getting people preferring Pfizer or Moderna to AstraZeneca. And actually, if I had a choice, I would take AstraZeneca, any vaccine that comes first. I would be perfectly fine. And I know many people in the UK over the age of, certainly over the age of 60, 65, who have actually been taking the AstraZeneca.
And a final question. If the decision is not to use it in people over 65, will that impede the vaccination going by age?
I think it does. However, I'm sure that our province will be very nimble, as it has always been. And in this case, with AstraZeneca, it makes sense to have the distribution through pharmacists or maybe family physicians, because it is that much more of a robust vaccine and can be delivered through those settings, and maybe leave the public health clinics and hospital clinics to deal with the more complex situations, as with Pfizer, with, you know, requiring those very elaborate ways of storing the vaccine and many restrictions with respect to the movement of vaccines.
We only have about 20 seconds left. Dr. Kurji, what would you like to leave us with?
I would say please have some patience. You know, we definitely will have the vaccines to you, but there will be bumps in the road. Please forgive us for those. But, you know, we're here to serve you, and we'll make sure that you get your vaccines.
Okay, thank you so much, Dr. Karim Kurji, York Region Medical Officer of Health. Thank you.
Thank you, Libby. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye. Okay, so if you could not get through, remember Free for All Friday is coming up, and gee, I have a hunch that we will be discussing vaccines even before then, and that's all the time we have for today.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one. This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.